නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතු අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, which is the 137th Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. And Buddha is giving a detailed explanation on the sense bases, how they are working, what are their counterparts, and what are their consequences, how to operate them, etc., etc. Now, just to give a summary, so Buddha discuss about six kinds of internal bases, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. Even though simply we are calling them eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind, that's a little deeper meaning here. It is not the simple physical eye, merely physical eye here we are meaning. Basically, when it comes to the sense base, actually it go beyond the typical physical level. Actually, it collects information, and after that, based on that information, the mind may involve, and then the more and more constructive, additive, and maybe subjective experience going to happen. So each individual has their own latent tendencies, preconceived ideas, habitual tendencies. So whatever we experience through eye is now subjected to various such preparations, constructions, formations, etc., etc. So therefore, that whole scenario we can consider as the chakku ayatana, the sense base of eye. So it is not the mere physical eye, but rather eye actually involved in the collection of the data. Here actually the sense data, the sight, and later the other mind particularly involved, and therefore it continuously do further analysis, and the eye also continuously get more and more information. Now the corresponding component or the external component for eye is the form, for ear is the sound, for noise, for nose is the smell or odor, for tongue it is the taste, for body it is the touch, and for the mind it is the dhamma. Now here the interesting part is the mind, where it is not merely the mental objects, but even the other form, sound, smell, taste, touch, they are also being comprehended by the mind. So therefore mind is the forerunner, as well as mind is the one who is ultimately consuming all the sense data. It is the one storing, it is the one consuming, it is the one ultimately getting troubled, because none of these data remains at the sense level, at the contact level, or at the external sense level. Rather, they are being constructed, manipulated, consumed at the mind level. And then when they are coming together, the eye consciousness arise. Similarly, the ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness and mind consciousness. And that is where the knowing part happens. Mere contact is not enough. The knowing part happens at the consciousness level. So they are being termed or named depending on the sense base. So whatever the consciousness arises at the eye is named as eye consciousness. Whatever the consciousness arises in the ear is named as ear consciousness. So likewise, different consciousness are arising at different sense bases due to the contact between eye and the ear. So eye and the form, ear and the sound, nose and the smell. So likewise, the corresponding consciousness arises. Now these three are operating very much rapidly, and they are again and again happening, the contact again and again happening, they are meeting again and again happening. So as a result of that, the contact, the eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact and mind contact happens. Now when the contact happens, it has further effect, and that produces the feeling, that produces the perception, and that produces further formations, constructions, preparations. Now, therefore, the contact is again considered as one of the precondition or prerequisite for the feelings, perceptions, and mental constructions or formations to happen. Passapaccaya vedana, passapaccaya sanya, and again passapaccaya sankhara. So likewise, we can recognize the contact is considered as one of the root cause for the arising of feelings, perceptions, and formations. Now, further Buddha explained 18 kinds of mental explorations. Now, when someone see something beautiful, the joy arises. Automatically, one tends to look at it further closely. One tends to look at it more intently and try to get more and more information, try to get more and more detail. So, there's a kind of time spent in that particular form. So the mind explores the particular form. The mind just hang on there, hang around there. Now that hanging around, just being with it, exploring it, is what we call explores a form, manopavichara. And as a result of that, the more and more joy can arise. Similarly, the opposite also can happen. Sometimes when we encounter a sight, grief can arise, but one may explore more and more grief can arise. So the mind is involved there, mind explores it. And similarly, the equanimity can arise on certain other situations. And if one is interested in that, so one further and further explores it, and more equanimity is produced. So likewise, these explorations of the mind continuously happen. So it may happen with respect to forms, with respect to sounds, smells, tastes, touch, and again the mind objects. Therefore, in a way, we can say there's no rest to the mind. It is continuously exploring something, always involving with something, either involved with the forms, either involved with the sounds, either involved with the smell, either involved with the taste, either involved with the touch, or either involved with mind objects. Now continuously this happens. And now Buddha further explained about another situation, that is the how one may live. So here Buddha categorized it to two broader areas. One may live kind of a household life, or one may live kind of a meditative life. So the household life is involved always with the joy, grief, and equanimity. And similarly, the meditative life also involves joy, grief, and equanimity. But they are quite different. Now, if we consider forms, so when one is gaining something, there are beautiful forms and one like to see it, one like to enjoy it, one like to possess it. And more one be with it, more and more joy can arise. So therefore, one consider having it or possessing it, owning it, gaining it as kind of a production of joy. So therefore, this is something that we all try to achieve. So more and more through the eyes, we are trying to produce joy by acquiring what we like, what is desirable, what is agreeable. And but unfortunately, there are other situations when we are not being able to acquire what we want. We are not gaining what we want. Probably even we had something in the past, but now it is not available. Now in Sri Lanka, many issues are there. In the past, suppose you had enough fuel, but now not available. So you are having kind of a domanasa, despair is there. So the despair is also not difficult to recognize, because when we consider various forms, there are various forms we like to see, but sometimes we not get the chance to see. And similarly, there are forms which is producing equanimity, and They simply produce equanimity because we are simply keeping our mind at the surface. So assume that you are going through a bus and there are other passengers, and most of them you don't know. And when you are seeing someone to whom that you don't know much, and then the feeling available is equanimity. So that feeling is basically based on ignorance, because you are simply surveilling in the surface without knowing much of the deep stuff. Rather, simply we take the face value, conventional terms, and as a result of that, the equanimity is there. So this is the household kind of equanimity produced because of various forms, by seeing forms by the eye. And similarly, suppose you are hearing certain sounds. So if you are hearing a very beautiful song, then definitely there's a little joy arise, and probably you are, as previously explained, you start to explore it more and more, and more and more joy can arise, and you like to have it, you like to record it, you like to listen to it again and again, and you like to own it, name it, label it. So all these are considered as a gain, kind of a gain to your sight. So when you have it, when you gain it, maybe even when you record it, probably the joy arises. On the opposite, there are other situations that you won't get what you want. Probably a power cut, so you can't listen to sounds, you can't listen to music. Then you get some sort of a despair. And sometimes what you are hearing is not something you expected. You expected kind of a praise, but you didn't get enough praise. You didn't get enough appreciation. But you expected a huge appreciation, but you didn't get it. So there again, certain amount of despair can arise. Similarly, we consider the sounds. Say when I am now talking to you, most probably your mind may be equanimous. And if you are simply just getting the surface value, again the equanimity is the most predominant feeling. And not knowing more deep stuff or more deep details or more deep knowledge about sounds, we simply surveil in the surface, and then what we have is the equanimity. So Buddha therefore mentioned this is kind of a ignorant equanimity, anyan upekha, ignorant equanimity. So similarly, we can understand the others. So that is smells, tastes, tactile sensations or tangibles, and the mind objects. So all these scenarios actually can produce joy, grief, and equanimity. And this is the typical household kind of joy, grief, and equanimity. And this is quite familiar to us. This is what we are every day going through. And even though certain difficult Pali terms are there, what we are explaining here is quite common to all of us. So it is our simple experience that Buddha is explaining here in more analytical manner. Now, suppose there's a person who has led that kind of a mundane type of lifestyle, and now he is get on to some amount of meditation. Now, while he is going through meditation, suppose at the beginning he is developing mindfulness and another fair amount of concentration. Now, once he has fair amount of concentration and mindfulness, suppose now he is observing various phenomena. If we take the form, suppose he is practicing Kaya Anupassana. Now, if he is practicing Kaya Anupassana and experiencing different forms, maybe say rising and falling of the abdomen, maybe hardness, maybe stiffness, maybe roughness, maybe softness, maybe heaviness or lightness. So likewise, various element characteristics one can recognize. So this is one level of vipassana, where you are trying to recognize most, say, individual characteristics, what is more unique to each and every element. So likewise, you are developing fair amount of penetrative knowledge. You are not now simply surveilling in the surface, Rather, you are now trying to use your mindfulness and concentration to look deeply, to investigate. So when you are investigating, then there's a possibility that you are getting some kind of a joy also, because you have heard about these things, but you have never experienced them yourself. But now you got an opportunity. Okay, you are now experiencing them yourself deeply, and you understand, okay, these are the characteristics of, say, earth element, these are the characteristics of fire element, water element. So likewise, you understand. So even that can lead certain amount of happiness. But on the other hand, deep happiness is possible when you see more and more the even the impermanent nature of these characteristics. Whatever the earth element, it may not remain as it is. It constantly arise and pass away. Say, air element is also similar. Heat element is also similar. The water element is also similar. So likewise, if when you are able to recognize these further characteristics, common characteristics, then there's another type of joy arise, and Buddha call it as kind of a transcendental kind of joy. It is not the mundane type of joy. It's a kind of a supramundane type of joy. So that joy is something discussed in this level, where when one is going through some meditation practice, particularly the vipassana practice, one may enjoy that kind of a happiness. That is an unworldly kind of happiness. It is not that you have the typical gratification of senses, rather using certain spiritual qualities that you are gaining it. You got to develop mindfulness, you got to develop a fair amount of concentration, and then that mindfulness and concentration has to be well focused on a particular phenomena. And when that particular phenomena is showing its own behavior, its true nature, then we also understand, okay, this is something that Buddha has mentioned. So this is what called the impermanence. So likewise, certain understanding arise in our mind. So at that time, fair amount of joy can arise. So sometimes Buddha mentioned the grief also is possible, because when we are going through such insights, we are yearning for further insight or further understanding. At the moment, I am with some, say, limited understanding. I am practicing now, but I am yearning for something more, something advanced. Maybe the achievement of path and fruition. But I am not yet achieved that. So when you are having that kind of a feeling, even though I am experiencing some kind of a truth here, things as they truly are, still my mind has not yet completely free. It hasn't completely liberated. I haven't yet got a chance to be a noble person. So likewise, we may have certain unfulfilled desires with respect to the spiritual life. So at that time, the grief can arise. But this grief is different from the previous one. Here the grief arises because of something spiritual. We haven't been able to accomplish our spiritual goals. So at that time, this what you call the grief can arise. So this is called the nekkhammasitta domanasa. And on the other hand, equanimity is also possible. Here the equanimity is quite different from the household kind of equanimity. Here you have penetrative knowledge. You are experiencing various phenomena, but you understand their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. But the mind is associating, or rather experiencing, certain amount of equanimity. That is also possible. So this equanimity is with wisdom. So you are not merely in the surface, you are not merely with the conventions. Rather, you are now being able to recognize more deeply the true nature of various phenomena. So as you are experiencing these further, the equanimity may going to arise. Now, the equanimity actually has broader scope, where simply when you are going through some ordinary kind of experience, say for example, we are in a walking path and you are practicing walking meditation, and more elements, characteristics you are able to experience. Since they are quite of ordinary experiences, you may not experience real joy or despair, what you mostly experience is the equanimity. That is also one level. On the other hand, when you are able to understand their impermanent nature, how quickly they arise and pass away, so there are also certain amount of equanimity can arise. Another level. Suppose that you are going further and you understand the impermanence, the unsatisfactoriness, non-self. Mostly when you understand those, most probably equanimity is the one most predominant. Suppose even another level, that the mind let go of all these conditioned phenomena, and at least temporary mind is now freed. Now the mind is temporarily liberated. It doesn't associate anything. So at this level also the equanimity is most prominent. So therefore we can say equanimity is in a way fairly broader, and so this is the equanimity that Buddha talks in the renunciative life or the meditative life. Now, this can be explained with respect to sounds, with respect to smells, with respect to tastes, with respect to tangibles, and with respect to mind objects. The previous five actually are the Kayanupassana level, and the last one is actually come to the Vedanupassana, Chittanupassana, and Dhammanupassana. So, actually in the Kayanupassana, we are mostly dealing with the form aggregate. In Vedanupassana we are dealing with the feeling aggregate. In Chittanupassana we are dealing with the consciousness aggregate, and most prominently. And in the Dhammanupassana we can say we are dealing with all five aggregates. Now when one develops equanimity like this, so Buddha mentioned equanimity is twofold. Now, when we are using forms as our meditation object to recognize their true nature, so then the equanimity produced has come through forms, by analyzing forms, contemplating forms. Suppose you are hearing a continuous sound, kind of a vibration. So there the sound is most prominent, and through which, through that observation, you are able to achieve equanimity. And again, when you are observing smell or taste or tangibles are the most commonly used one. Say your foot is touching the ground and fair amount of sensations are arising. So there, what you available is the equanimity produced because of the tangibles. And sometimes you are observing the mind and various mental objects are coming and going, various thoughts are coming and going, and you are able to recognize them and allow them to go. Now, most prominently, the mental objects are predominant. So therefore, the produced equanimity has some roots coming from the different sides, coming from either from the form, either from sounds, either from say taste, either from tangibles. So likewise, the some kind of a differentiation is there. So therefore, this is called equanimity which is diversified. Equanimity with diversity. So they are quite different. But now, suppose that one is developing this equanimity, and again and again he is developing it, and as a result of that, his mind again and again get temporarily released. Suppose he is going through walking meditation, and there also his mind get released for some time. He is meditating cross-legged, and there also his mind get released. Suppose because of say observing some other phenomena. Now the release happens quite often, and even it can last for some time. Previously it lasts only for 5 minutes, but now assume that it lasts for 10 minutes. Now it lasts for 15 minutes, now it lasts for 20 minutes, now it lasts for 30 minutes. So likewise, now the yogi is getting more and more familiar with this release of the mind. Even though it is temporary, he can now maintain it for some time. So therefore it is getting registered in one's mind. Now this equanimity now become more predominant. Now one can try to quickly jump to it without going through the whole meditative process, how about quickly putting one's mind to that equanimity? So this is something that we need to try in a way. So we are now developing kind of an equanimity, kind of a concentration in the mind. So that concentration is able to achieve again and again. We can call it kind of emptiness, we can call it kind of signless concentration, or we can call it desireless concentration. But when you are developing it more and more, it gets further registered in the mind. Now it becomes more familiar to you. And you may get a thought, why can't I put my mind there directly? Now you are trying that. But most probably, you can't stay there for a long time because you haven't developed the necessary amount of momentum coming through the practice. Actually, if you are practicing daily and often, most probably you can stay longer. But on the other hand, if you practice less, then your duration of that equanimity would be more and more less. So that equanimity, by the way, when you are more and more developed, it becomes more familiar, and now you don't need to come through those examinations of forms, sounds, tastes, smells, tangibles and mental objects. Rather, you can be in that equanimity. You can dwell in that equanimity. Now the equanimity is the one most predominant, and it doesn't have any kind of a flavor now. It didn't come through sounds, smells, tastes, forms or tangibles, etc. Now you are able to be there. You are dwelling there. Now it has become more and more kind of unity. Now it is the equanimity based on unity. So therefore Buddha mentioned equanimity is twofold. Equanimity based on diversity and the equanimity based on unity. So we can say what we achieve at the beginning is mostly the equanimity based on diversity. And further practice, further cultivation, one may move forward to the equanimity based on unity. Now Buddha explained this equanimity based on unity as with respect to Arupa Jhana. Probably you have heard about Arupa Jhana. The first Jhana is the boundless concentration on the space, and the second one is boundless concentration on the consciousness, Vijnanam Chayatana. Third one is boundless concentration on the nothingness, Akinchanyayatana. And then the fourth one is boundless concentration based on neither perception nor non-perception, Vijnanam Nevasanya Nasanyayatana. Now these are actually one can achieve through kasina in samatha practice. So there's a, we can create kind of a concept called kasina, and you can use a kind of a plate. It could be maybe a color plate, or it could be a kind of a element based plate. Or you can even use one of your body part, even to derive that color or the element characteristics. So there are 10 kasinas, and these kasinas help us to further develop the concentration in samatha practice. If you want to get on to immaterial jhana, or what we call arupa jhana, you can't achieve it using anapana sati. Anapanasati will take you only to the fourth jhana, that is a form jhana or the material jhana. But if you want to go to immaterial jhana, arupa jhana, you have to practice kasina. Now kasina practice also quite interesting, and you can use, as I mentioned, the certain body parts. For example, say if you are able to recognize the color of the hair, so it can interpret as kind of a bluish. So that can be used as a color kasina. And if you are able to recognize the skull, So the skull is mostly the white color, and that white color can be extracted from the skull, and that can be used to develop as a carcinoma. And say if you are extracting blood using the blood, you are again and again paying your attention to blood, so it is red color, reddish, and using that you can take the red carcinoma. So likewise, the body parts can be used to develop arupa jahana. So internally you are using body parts, sometimes you are using them as color carcinoma, extracting their color, and sometimes you can use them as extracting their element characteristics. Say for example, skull or the skeleton has the earth characteristics. It is hard or it is gross. By contemplating that again and again, one can develop the earth carcinoma. Say if you are using urine, say there it is more into the liquid form, so you can use it as a way to produce water carcinoma. So likewise, the body parts can be used to develop carcinoma meditation, and that is one area. Now, this equanimity based on unity, Buddha mentioned, is more into the arupa jahana. So now you are very much like practicing samatha vipassana, samatha bhavana. Actually, you came through completely from the vipassana, but very much like now you are practicing very much like samatha. But actually, this is derived from vipassana. So the level of concentration what you are experiencing is more like the immaterial jhana, arupa jhana. And you have certain deep concentration as well. If you like, you can spend time in this deep concentration as well. And it has no boundary. It is boundless. So therefore, Buddha mentioned, this is with respect to boundless jhana. Now, Buddha asked us to practice further, not just absorb to this arupa jhana, but to non-identify with it, or to let go of it, using atammayata, using what we call non-identification. Now actually the yogi is fairly a mature person, he has fair amount of understanding of these experiences, and he has gone through all these practices. So when mind is absorbed to something, so he understand, okay, I am that. So this mind has become something, this mind has become that. So Buddha asked us to avoid that identification. Don't be that. Suppose when you are practicing arupa jhana, so if your mind is deeply concentrated and you are very much like absorbed to it, you have become that. But now Buddha asks us to emerge from that, to let go of that. Don't be that. Don't be that particular deeply concentrated state. Rather, take it to the surface and just let it go. Now the problem is, when you are coming to the surface, mind go and attach to something. Because mind has certain amount of tendencies, certain amount of attachment, craving. As a result of that, there's a higher possibility that when you are shallowing your concentration, losing your concentration, then mind go and grasp something. And that is the point you have to practice vipassana again. Where you allow the mind to grasp, but the mindfulness will show you, okay, the fellow has again grasped something. At that time, you have to let it go. You are simply relinquishing it. And once you relinquish it, where are you going to keep your mind? Basically, nowhere. So you are not now trying to associate anything. So basically now you are practicing non-grasping state of mind, non-identification. So once you let go of any kind of grasping, we should not grasp another thing. So therefore it's a kind of a practical procedure that we need to continue. So you have achieved fair amount of concentration, and it is very much like a boundless concentration. You came through Vipassana approach, and once you are here, you need to recognize when your mind is coming to the surface, letting go of the deep concentration, where it is getting again grasped, where it is getting hang on, where it is getting latched on. So that grasping has to be let go of. Now, in a way, more and more the mind becomes natural. It is not absorbed to anything. It is not grasping anything. Actually, the jhana is very much like you are grasping a deep concentrative state. That is why we call it an absorption. You are deeply absorbed to some sort of a feeling, deeply absorbed to some sort of a perception. So that is why we call it as a jhana, absorption. But Buddha asks here to not to identify that, not to identify with it. Don't be that. Come to the surface, let go of everything. Don't be anyone or don't be anything. Now this is more and more into the Vipassana side, where you are maintaining a mind without any grasping, without any sort of absorption. And you are not trying to be anyone here. Actually, so we have a kind of a deep tendency to become someone. So I am currently not the person that I want to be. So I want to be another person. So I am currently unsatisfied. The present moment I am living kind of a unsatisfactory way. I am in a bad mood. I am in a unsatisfied mood. I am in a kind of a frustration because I want to become someone. Suppose you are a university student. Say, while being a university student, you want to become an engineer. You want to become a doctor. You want to become an accountant. So you are always yearning for that achievement. When am I going to have the final exam? When am I going to have the, say, completion of my degree? When am I going to become that particular person whom that you have dreamed for? So always we have these ambitions. These ambitions are the ones driving us, motivating us. So that is actually have some actually the practical value. But when you reach these kind of vipassana levels, deep vipassana practices, so that you have to let go of. So you can't be anyone, you can't be anything. So this is something very difficult in a way, because our mind always want to drive us towards a kind of a goal, always pushing us towards something, always not satisfied in the present moment, always feeling like something missing. So Buddha mentioned this in certain other suttas. Uno loko atitto tanha daso uno. Uno means every time you feel like I am not filled, I am not complete, you are always with lacking something. Atitto, you are not completely satisfied, you are a little unsatisfied, you are not completely fulfilled. Tanha daso, you are a slave to craving. So these are the deep human natures we are sharing actually. Always wanting to become someone, always unsatisfied in the present moment, and yearning for something new in the future. Always wanting to become someone in the future. Always want to become with someone in the future. Acquire something in the future. If I acquire him, that I'll be happy. If I acquire her, possess her, I marry her, then I'll be happy. If I be with her, then I'll be happy. If I'm able to get a promotion, then I'll be happy. If I'm able to migrate to a rich country, then I'll be happy. If I'm able to achieve a, say, higher degree, then I'll be happy. So likewise, always we are yearning for something in the future, and this is what we call the bhavatanha, desire to become. Now, using non-identification, atammayata, So we have to let go of this craving. These are very deeply rooted type of subtle craving. So these subtle cravings are only visible when our minds are fairly purified. So when you are sort of engrossed with so many sensual desires, so these most deeply rooted desires are invisible. They are the ones actually promoting all these different sensual desires, but their operation is quite invisible, hidden. But when your mind is fairly free, so then mostly these desires are visible. The kind of a very deeply rooted tendencies going to be visible. Now, therefore, Buddha mentioned to recognize these very subtle desires, let go of them, and become no one in a way. Not to become anybody. And not to become anything either. Now, when you are seeing something, so you very much like, if you are absorbed to that sight, then you have become that. So that is what we call as a jhana. Say you are seeing kasina again and again. So you are applying your mind again and again to that kasina. And ultimately you become that. So you are absorbed to that kasina. If it is a color kasina, say it's a red color kasina. So the color, the red, is the one that again and again you are perceiving. Again and again you are perceiving. Again and again you are perceiving. And ultimately you become reddish. Your mind is completely reddish. And you can expand it. You can sort of expand it to the whole directions. So completely the mind becomes reddish. So you have become reddish. So you can become that. So similarly the other things as well. Say when you are deeply absorbed to lust, you are completely bewildered by lust. So if you are more into the anger, you are completely bewildered by anger. So the mind is burning with anger. Mind has become that. So similarly, so we can understand even the, say, conceptual things we can become. Say I'm a doctor. You can become a doctor. I am an engineer, so can become an engineer. But it's a concept. But we like to become that. So I am a father, I am a mother, I am a lawyer, I am a teacher, I am a monk. So all these are having some conceptual values, but we grasp them and we want to become them. We want to protect it. Now we become that. So becoming something is deeply rooted. So I have seen that there's even a book written by someone, I think Maharshi Ramana, I am that. So basically, Buddha say not to identify. So this is something very deep, that the principle of atammayata, not being identified with anything. Don't try to become anyone. Don't try to become anything. So then, where is the mind established? We can approach this state in a different direction also. So the mind cannot establish in any place. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so this is the unestablished consciousness. Ultimately the arahants may have. So the mind is not established in anywhere. Mind is unmanifested. So the terms like anidassana vijnana, appatittita vijnana refers to those states where the mind is not established in anywhere and mind is not manifested as anything. So these teachings are fairly actually matching, fairly pointing to the same thing, or the liberated state of mind where the mind is completely liberated. So that is the term, the liberation, showing that it does not absorb to anything, does not holding to anything, does not become slave to anything, does not associate anything, does not grasping anything, then it is liberated, then it is completely free. So therefore this teaching, atammayata, is a kind of a very interesting, deep teaching of the Buddha, and it is sometimes we can say given less emphasis in a way. And there's a very interesting teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa, a meditation master as well as an academic in Thailand, who actually is not available now, he has passed away. And he has recognized, really appreciated the teaching of Atammeta, and he said one of the great teaching of the Buddha is Atammeta, the non-identification. So using non-identification, therefore Buddha asks us even to let go of the concentration states, not to absorb to any concentration, just let go of that and keep the mind liberated, keep the mind unassociated, unattached, not grasping anything. Okay, I think the time permits only to discuss this today. I have some more things to discuss. Maybe we can discuss it on next week. So with that, I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. Now I like to start the discussion. Thank you very much for participation.
Hello friends, for anyone that's joining us for the first time, you may participate in the Q&A by raising your hand, or you can also submit them via the chat. Bhante, can you please share with us the characteristics of a Sotapanna?
Characteristics of a Sotapanna?
Maybe it's not called characteristics, but for example, like the one of them is not associating the body with the self, and there's like two others.
Yeah. Actually, we can't say that the Sotapanna is completely not associating body or not associating feeling, etc. But he doesn't have the ignorance that considering body as a person. So it's a kind of a gross misunderstanding that thinking this whole body represent a person, this body represent a being, whole gamut of feelings represent a person, all different kinds of perceptions represent a person, different mental formations represent a person, different kinds of cognition, consciousness represent a person. So this is something, by the way, we are sort of familiar to, or we are sort of habituated doing that. Say for example, when I am calling that I went to somewhere, so then my body has moved from this place to another place, but I recognize this body as myself. Actually, conventionally we are calling it, no harm in that, but deeply this body consists of various body parts in one sense. So that is what, when we practice on this particular manasikara, 32 parts of the body, so we are able to dissect the body and recognize various anatomical parts. So ultimately we will understand, okay, this body is not a unit, this body is not a compact something, rather it's a combination of so many bodily parts. And when you are further practicing dhatu manasikara, elements meditation, you are able to even go deeper and to dissect the body and to understand the element characteristics prevalent in the body, and therefore you loses the compactness. So now you can't recognize the body as a person, body as a being, body as a man, body as a woman, but it's a manifestations of elements. So likewise, when you are practicing Vedananupassana, so you are understanding different kinds of feelings, maybe pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, equanimous feelings, they are constantly changing. So therefore you will understand, okay, these feelings can't be considered as a person. So therefore, and even when you are going to Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, then you may understand, okay, perceptions can't be understood as a person. Different mental formations can't be understood as a person. So likewise, so you are removing that compactness and you are breaking the continuity. More you understand the impermanent nature, transient nature, So you can't feel kind of a soul inside because constantly it is arising and passing away. So understanding there is a person inside, there is an everlasting soul inside, is not possible. Then you will understand, okay, it is a kind of a conditioned phenomena. Due to various causes and conditions, the results are coming. So there is no any lasting soul or self or any of such internally. So these are the kind of ignorances or the avijja, different forms of ignorance that one may penetrate when one is becoming a sotapanna. Sakkaya ditti vichikicca silabbata paramasa. So sakkaya ditti is the one considering the whole thing as one thing, the compactness view and the whole continuation as a one thing. And then the vichikicca is where having doubts about one's own practice, not clearing about one's practice, not firm about what to do. Say the silabbata paramasa is where without say your own practice, you are expecting kind of a purification from external sources, maybe bathing in the what you call the river Ganges, or bathing in wherever it is. So those kinds of wrong rituals, thinking that they will give you some sort of a purification, spiritual achievement through these external rituals. So these are the ones that one may eliminate, overcome, when one becomes a sotapanna.
Thank you. You mentioned about practicing the 32 parts. So even if one is able to clearly see this body as not compact as in the 32 parts, is that refined enough to eliminate this ignorance that you just mentioned for the sotapanna piece of, you know, not taking the body as kind of the self?
Actually, that is kind of arguable, Jennifer, because now if you consider the satipatthana practice, so each and every satipatthana practice, say Kayanupassana has 14 practices, everything based on the body, and each part Buddha takes us to the most deeper levels. Say through Anapanasati, you can achieve the unassociation, non-grasping state of mind. Using 32 parts, you can achieve that. You can, using Dhatu Manasikara, you can achieve that. So likewise, you can reach that unassociation, non-grasping state of mind using many techniques. But once you reach there, and you have to further develop, till this ignorance would be eliminated. So the different paths are available to reach certain higher level of understanding, and with that understanding you have to further practice, then there's a possibility that one can achieve sotapanna using any of those. Because there's another interesting sutta called Padesa Sutta, available in Satipatthana Samyutta. There is one question asked from I think from Venerable Ananda, Venerable Anuruddha. So the question is, why one is called Sekha? Why one is called a trainee? So then Venerable Anuruddha answers, telling, because he has developed Satipatthana only to a section, not fully, not the full completion in the sense all four Satipatthanas, he is called a trainee. So indirectly we can understand, so even one Satipatthana is therefore capable to become a sotapanna. But to become an arahant, one may have to have a fair amount of understanding on all four Satipatthana.
Thank you, Bhante. Wonderful. I'd like to invite Mahisha to please ask the next question.
Thanks, Jennifer. Bhante, this question is not directly related to the discussion we had today. Is that all right?
Yeah, fine.
This is something that I was thinking to ask for some time. Now, people, I don't say it's a ritual, but you know, when someone is in trouble or say sick, and particularly when doctors cannot find what's actually the cause, and you know, they couldn't figure it out a particular treatment plan. So people try to do lots of things like, you know, Bodhi Puja and all those things. So what about when a person is really, you know, not very old, but like a young person is sick and couldn't find a solution to treat, and then, you know, in Sri Lanka, the killing, cattle, say cows or cattles is considered as a bad thing, I don't know. And then they have a system of, you know, paying to the butcher or the person who is killing it, and then release that the animal, and then transfer that good merits of that to the person who was sick, and then do it, things like that they do. So I mean, when we're looking at it, like, makes sense, like, you know, you do a good deed and then transferring that merits. Is there a, like, a relationship to that, where those merits transferred and the person would get better, things like that? Had to encounter something like that, and I was thinking, then I gave up thinking, doesn't matter, maybe the merits has been transferred. But thought of, you know, clearing about it.
Yeah.
Sorry for the question, but thought to ask that.
Yeah, I think there is an effect, because now if we consider Bodhi Puja and various other rituals, now for the mundane kind of results, so there are many reasons actually come into being. Say for example, mentally one has to have some kind of a confidence for one's own recovery. Suppose someone is in deep trouble, and there are various ways that one can be encouraged to get out of that trouble. So one can advise him, one can point out where the thing have gone wrong, and again someone can do something good and sort of ask him to rejoice in what he has done, and you can take him to a kind of a setting which is more calm, quiet, like a temple or wherever the mind is calming down, and he can ask to relax there. And these are more into the psychological side, where one is trying to sort of somewhat clear one's confusion, more agitation. So the agitation would be reduced when one is going through these kinds of rituals. So therefore, we can't therefore say that these rituals are completely empty. But the point that I want to highlight at the Sotapanna level in the previous discussion was thinking that these rituals merely give us the complete liberation. Merely using the rituals that one may get the complete purification of the mind, complete understanding of the deep truths. So that would be the misunderstanding. But the typical rituals may have a certain impact on one's psyche, considering that, say, I did something good, so then you are reflecting about that, then kind of a joy arise, so that is able to reduce the anxiety or kind of regrets available in one's mind, so therefore it is helpful. And on the other hand, during the Buddha's time also, there is one lady called Rohini. She is actually the sister of Venerable Anuruddha, and she encountered kind of a rash, something really smelly, troublesome rash in her whole body. And Buddha knowingly went to her house, and when the dana was arranged. And then Buddha asked, where is Rohini? And then Venerable Anuruddha mentioned that she is sick. And then actually Buddha asked her to do some rituals. Rituals in the sense, I mean, go to a temple and clean the garden, and that's kind of duties Buddha asked to conduct. And slowly she recovered. And those kinds of diseases are karma originated. And Buddha knew, I mean, this is the reason for this particular disease. So the opposite is done. So she has now done a fairly wholesome deed. So the power of the wholesome deed, now she was able to overcome the power of the unwholesome deed. So therefore, when we come going through certain difficult situation, there may be various reasons. We can't exactly say, okay, this is due to karma, this is due to this and that. But anyway, trying various options would be, therefore, I can say it's there may be certain effect. And certainly when you do certain good things and try to transfer merits, as you mentioned, the release of cattle. So this generate fair amount of merit. And you can explain or sort of transfer that to that person. That person has to be rejoiced. Okay, I have released this cattle, or she is subjected to killing. So then you, that joy, the rejoicing is helpful to sort of release one's illness. So therefore, there is an impact.
Okay, thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Bhante, I had a very unusual experience a few weeks ago. Very beautiful, very, very beautiful, deep realization. I was not planning on meditating at that time, and my eyes were open, and I had just gone for a kind of walk. When I stepped into a very, very beautiful place, very tranquil, very still, and very calm, and in that stillness, it was like a rainforest, very, like a monastery setting, but it was not a monastery. My eyes were open, and I went into this, what I saw, or I cannot actually explain, because it's beyond words for me to explain the feeling, but my eyes were open and I could not see anything, except if I were to explain, it was like a canvas with smudged colors in it, and I was feeling so good and feeling really very empty. When I heard my name being called, then I got up. Might have been maybe 15 to 20 minutes, or maybe less than 1 hour. I don't think I was there for anything more than an hour. And I got up with the feeling that there's no picture. This is the deep understanding that I got, because I can't actually explain the feeling and the situation. I've never experienced it before. I got up with this feeling that there's no picture outside and there's no picture inside, and therefore it is all empty, and that's the feeling, or the deep insight that I got. Because to give you a bit of a background onto my practice very briefly, I have been practicing for a very long time, for several years, and my area of practice has been Chittanupassana all the time, and I have been lately, because I can see all the thoughts coming, and I always think about the thoughts in the Satatthana Sutra, where Buddha explains the seven ways, so that I'm letting kind of go this thought. So therefore, maybe perhaps that, because I've never experienced this with my eyes open, can you please give me some guidance? My
thinking was that I didn't see any sanya, any perceptions. That was the kind of where previously I associated everything with the sanya. So before I could think all the, understanding of the object. If I see a tree, then I know a tree is an Aranya tree, or it automatically comes. In this case, all the trees, everything was like colors of smudge color. And I was so happy that I realized that there's no picture. The picture that makes, I make a picture, there's no picture outside, but the picture that I make is inside my mind. But at that moment, I realized if I didn't take the sanya, then there was no picture to make. Is that my understanding? Can you please guide me?
Yeah. Actually, quite interesting. And these kinds of insights happen when we are not really prepared. So when we are mostly prepared and try to meditate, it is sometimes not successful, because we are trying too hard and we are not maintaining the proper balance. And most of the time our effort is too much. But when we are in a more relaxed, the experience like what you have mentioned, say you are in an empty garden, kind of a open space, open area, and you are simply relaxing there. So your mind has enough freedom to calm down, so there are no any disturbances, there are no any distractions, and basically mind has the capacity to go out or just to release in a way. So therefore the mind become empty. So therefore, meditating with eyes closed is one level of practice, and you can later practice even while the eyes are open. So your mind is not necessary. Mind now doesn't want to get distracted. Now previously we are closing our eyes because we are used to get distracted. Now you are restricting your behavior of the mind. So you are very much in a kind of a prototype model where you are sort of giving a kind of boundary to the mind to operate. But once you practice a fair amount, when mind is not getting distracted, now say you are in the walking path and your eyes are open and there are various incidents happen, but now mind is unmoved. On such situation, it is not necessary to keep the eyes closed. You can keep the eyes open. Now, similarly, like your experience, say you are in a garden and it is quite relaxed, it is quite beautiful. So the necessary, conditions for the mind to have a kind of a deep insight is available now. You are in a relaxed mood. Mind is quite happy. And there is no inner chatter. Mind is simply sort of relaxed. So this is the time most productive for insight. So therefore, understanding, okay, there is no perception in the mind. So when perception is not there, when you are not entangled to a particular perception, there is no art, there is no any picture. So it's interesting. So these things can happen, of course.
So it's my understanding, because I was in deep stillness, I know that.
Yes, that's right.
My eyes were open, because with my practice, what I was struggling is like when you close your eyes, actually you know with the practice and the Dhamma and the Sutra studies that we have done with you, Bhante, thank you so much for all the teachings, basically there is no self. But when you open the mind, there is this self, like, you know, this solid body, and it's hard to sort of shake it out that you don't have a self. I mean, you know, in theory, kind of, but this was a nice, and I feel so good about it still when I think about that situation, because and I have been looking at my Chittanupassana very, very clearly with the five khandhas that has been my subject for some time. So what I realized was, if you take an object and if you see an object, then as soon as you see the object, there's so many mental formations that come, whether you like it or not, I don't know, it happens so instantaneously, because I'm not trying to hold anything back. to give an example, if I, very short example, just a brief one, if I step out of my house, there's already a tree. And for the seasons, when the arrowhead tree is in full bloom, when it's in summer, and after winter, when the arrowhead tree comes up with the flowers, you immediately, you know, when you get out, you're not looking at it, but you, so many facts about that tree comes onto your head automatically. So like that.
Those will reduce, actually. Slowly those will reduce, and don't encourage that. So basically...
You know, I've just given... So,
yeah.
I'm not talking about that
relationship. Yeah, yeah, I know. But the So basically, we need to reduce those constructions. So that is the sankhara samatha, no? So typically, whenever any kind of sense stimuli happens to our various senses, so there's a tendency to stimulate the mind. There's a tendency to arouse formations. That we need to understand that and simply let it go. Rather than encouraging those formations, we have to calm down, we have to relax, we have to let go of those formations. Then there is a possibility, when you see, it is just seeing. When you hear, just hearing. So likewise, the mind is quiet, mind is still, as you mentioned. Mind is still, mind becomes still, irrespective of the external stimuli.
But this is the first time that I didn't recognize any trees at all or
correct.
Anything.
Yes.
And later on when I went, I could see this is this tree or this is the water, this is the building. But at that very moment, it was deep stillness that I realized. So there is no picture outside. The picture is made internally.
Correct.
When we see an object, we see the picture internally. But at that time, because I didn't take any sanya at all, I didn't make a picture. So there was no me to make the picture. So then that gave me that absolute confidence that there was no such thing called a self. At that point in time, it is just simply, you know, if we didn't relate to it, there was nothingness, and that emptiness was the beautiful experience I had. I cannot tell it in words, the experience is. That's what I wanted to.
Yeah.
So what should I do now? Anything that you can...
Now, again, allow that experience to happen again and again. So again, even in the sitting meditation, if you are doing some formal practice, just keep your eyes open and just relax. So rather than going to a very sort of scheduled, more formal, restrictive kind of meditation, just relax yourself and see what mind is doing. Because since you are practicing Chittanupassana, so you have to give enough freedom for the mind to behave as it like. Then only you can understand the various tendencies still mind is going through. So when you give enough freedom to the mind, you have a better opportunity to understand it. And when you are giving enough freedom, probably mind simply let go of everything and again probably can experience this deep emptiness. Because you can't have deep emptiness till you hold it strongly. Because mind can't move. You are restricting it. But when you are open, when you are keeping an open heart, open mind, unrestricted, kind of boundless, then mind has an opportunity to bloom. Mind has an opportunity to go out or to unestablish, not to establish on any place, but to become very much like unestablished. So we are actually talking in different directions, like say when you are talking unestablished, when you are talking nothingness, when you are talking non-identification, relaxed, so unassociation, not grasping. So these are the various facets of the same experience, actually.
And this was something very unexpected to
Yeah, I think this is the most natural and most interesting and most correct form of emptiness in that sense, because the previous emptiness is more very much like artificial type of. So you are there, you have become that. But here you haven't even become that. So mind is not established anywhere. So that is where you get a more opening, freedom, release.
Anything. I was just in that deep stillness of emptiness, and this is when my name was called out because we were going for a walk, and I got up with this understanding or realization, and since then I feel very much light in my body.
Good.
Lightness. Thank you so much for your guidance.
Okay.
That
one's online.
Just a few queries. Bhante, you spoke about this container. I just interested because we don't normally do that. So you suggested that as we start the meditation, please correct me if I have got it wrong, one looks at these colors, whether it's the white color of the skull or redness of the blood. Is that what you said, Bhante? We start with sort of seeing this thing in front of us. Is that right?
In front of, in the sense, now when you practice 32 parts, there's a possibility that you are recognizing the color of the object, the body part. So when you are experiencing again and again the body, so the head hair, so the black color, the bluish color, again and again is sort of programmed to the mind. So when you are experiencing the skull, so again and again the skull, the color is sort of focused to the mind. So ultimately you let go of all the other things, but simply focus to the color only. So that is how you derive the color from various body parts.
So then that becomes the object of meditation.
Exactly. Yes. So you let go of the body part now, but you extract the color, and now the color becomes the object of meditation.
So from what I understood, that is a way to go into the arupa jhana. Did I understand that correctly?
Actually, not immediately to arupa jhana. Slowly you reach the first jhana, second jhana, likewise, and then you can go to the arupa jhana as well.
To the vipassana, then you have explained about this unstabilized mind, right?
Unestablished.
Unestablished, okay. Unestablished mind. Now that is the mind of an arahat. Is that right, or is that a kind of voidness?
We can say it's a voidness, but to the full form, it may be the he may be the arahant who is experiencing it to the full-fledged form.
But in meditation, we can get into some sort of emptiness, which we have discussed before in the past.
Yeah, for a temporary period, one can have it in the vipassana practice, yes.
Yes, and where do we go from there, Bhante?
To non-identification. To go nowhere. Yeah, so that is the point. So we always want to go somewhere, to always want to become someone. So the Buddha's advice is now recognize that deep desire, subtle desire. So where am I want to go? What is next? Where should I go? To whom that I have to say become? So that is the desire now we need to recognize. Exactly.
So is that the state then that we, I mean, we are is the end result. Would that be right?
No, thing is, now when you are in a deep concentrative state, so fairly the mind is somewhat conditioned.
Yes.
So now we have to let go of that conditioning part and come to the very natural state, come to the surface. So then we are losing the conditioning, but it can drawn to grasping. So there you need to recognize that grasping and let go of the grasping.
So that, but I thought everything is cause and effect, that we don't do anything, it just happens. Am I saying
correct? Yeah, correct. Everything is cause and effect, we can say so. So while we are in the deep concentration, we are maintaining it, no?
Yes.
So that maintenance part you have to reduce now. Allow the mind itself to sustain. So then it is actually difficult. I mean, being in a more concentrated, deeply concentrated state, in a way, is one level. And being completely sort of unidentified, unestablished in the more natural state, in another level, another way. And the second one is more difficult in a way, because you again and again getting distracted.
Yes.
The mind may go and grasp. So then we need to understand why it is going and grasping. Then we come to the as a solution. Okay, still that inner tendencies are available. Deeply rooted becoming process is available. Bhava Tanna is available. So this revelation of the deeply rooted craving. So we are understanding some tendencies still operating in the mind. So while you are simply absorbed to the deep concentration, you can't recognize these tendencies.
So we are encouraged to go to get out of that.
Yeah, and be natural, be more natural, down to earth.
Right. Now, thank you, Bhante. Then the other thing was that you just touched on the Sotapanna. Now, at what stage does the Sotapanna, now we in the meditation we see all these things that we have been discussing in the suttas, you know, the body, the non-compactness of the body and the feelings, there's nothing in the feelings because it comes and goes, and also the perception and thoughts. So at what stage does the Sotapanna consolidate that?
Actually that is difficult to answer. So there are Buddha mentioned that it is better one may reflect again and again whether one has such attachment or whether one has such ignorance again and again. So reflections is the one that help us to understand whether we really achieved it or whether we still have to practice. So there are, I'll try to find out that there's a beautiful sutta called Kosambiya Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya,
yes,
where Buddha explained, I think, six or seven contemplations, which help us to verify whether we are there. So therefore, it is quite difficult for another person to tell that one has achieved Sotapanna, because one can pretend even. And without really understanding, without really deeply experiencing, one can pretend that. Or one can misunderstand also. So therefore...
Because in real life, we are not feeling that we are floating paths and all. It can be in the meditation. Because in the real life, we are all that, we don't feel paths and all that, but of course we can see the feelings coming and going and the thoughts coming and going.
Of
course you can observe.
Yeah, those seven contemplations actually, or six contemplations, actually not really very much into the philosophical type of things, but rather very practical verifications. Say, for example, Buddha mentioned, if you do something wrong, so one, the typical mundane tendency is not to accept one's fault, try to hide it, and behave like kind of a saint.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Sotapanna's behavior is quite different. He rather accept his own fault and he like to confess it and to correct himself.
Yes.
So likewise,
yeah.
So likewise, very interesting contemplations, verifications Buddha explained, and I'll try to explain it maybe another time.
Yes, Bhante. Because not that it matters. I mean, what you are, as long as you're going on this path, and that is as a form of grasping or wanting or whatever. So it's not important. But at the same time, one likes to progress on the path.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Bhante?
Sure, definitely,
so,
definitely.
So we need some guidelines from our teachers.
Yes,
from
yes.
Our teacher, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, thank you very much, Bhante.
Okay.
I believe that's the last question for tonight.
Okay, yeah. So, thank you very much for everybody's active participation and who's joining from US and Canada, so for, I mean, waiting this long night. So then with that, we'll conclude today's Dhamma discussion, this Sutta teaching session, and we'll share the merits with all the celestial beings, all the past level relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition, Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampattu siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.